Welcome to The Scrap Show, a production of Recycling Today. Covering the business of scrap metal recycling, we feature conversations about markets, technology, the industry's rich history, and the traditions and ways of doing business that stay reliably familiar. Listen in as guests from across the country and around the world, processors, traders, and industry allies provide insights and observations. The Scrap Show, a conversation between friends in an industry with a rich history and a bright future.
Hello, and welcome to The Scrap Show. I'm Deanne Toto, Editorial Director of the Recycling Today Media Group. Today, I'm joined by Duncan Pitchford, who is president of Hydro Aluminum Metals, a company that is making a number of investments that will increase its ability to melt aluminum scrap. Welcome, Duncan. How are you today?
Deanne, it's great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're excited to hear what you have to share with us. Let's start by kicking things off with you telling me a little bit how you came to work at Hydro and what your role as president of Hydro Aluminum Metals involves.
Sure. My path to joining Hydro is a bit different than most. I made a midlife career change. My background is actually as a lawyer and made a decision to go back to school and get my MBA. And the last thing you have to do as an MBA student in most programs is complete a capstone consulting project. And my consulting project was for Hydro, actually. And that turned into a job opportunity. And now we are here 6 years and 1 month later. So my current role at Hydro is I am president of the U.S. legal unit for our, we call our aluminum metals business area. That's our primary smelting portfolio globally, as well as most of our standalone aluminum recycling plants. So here in the U.S., we have three plants, one in Kentucky, one in Texas, and our newest plant in Michigan. In addition, I serve as the chief commercial officer for the Americas. And so that means I have responsibilities in Brazil and Canada and Mexico as well.
Well, I'll save the lawyer jokes for another time, but know you are in good company. There are plenty of people who have law degrees and find themselves in the recycling industry. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the investments that Hydro is making in scrap melting capacity in the U.S. And why you are investing in low carbon aluminum production?
We've made a number of investments in the U.S. to increase our scrap melting capacity in the last few years. In our extrusion division, for example, we've expanded capacity at our recycling plant in The Dalles, Oregon, as well as our largest plant in the U.S. in Cressona, Pennsylvania. But our biggest investment has been the new facility in Cassopolis, Michigan. And that facility can produce 120,000 metric tons or 265 million pounds a year of recycling-based extrusion ingot. And that investment is really designed to help us meet the growing demand for lower carbon or greener, if you will, aluminum products. What we see is our customers have targets that they want to meet when it comes to lowering the impact of the material that they are purchasing. And they're doing that for a couple of reasons. One is regulatory. There are regulatory schemes more so within in Europe than here in the US, although some have been talked about to push companies to reduce the carbon impact of the products that they sell. But it's more to meet, I would say, the consumer demand. It's the consumer that is asking for these types of products. And of course, business responds to consumer demand. And we see more and more consumers asking questions about the products that they buy. How are they produced? Are they produced responsibly? Are they produced in a way that minimizes the environmental impact of those products? And at Hydro, you know, we're really leaning in, if you will, in trying to help our customers meet that challenge.
And you mentioned the Cassopolis plant. I believe that started up at the end of last year with expectations to be at full capacity by the middle of this year. Can you talk a bit about how that ramp up has gone and what factors have affected it?
That's correct. We melted the first metal in November of 2023. A little over a year and a half after we put a shovel in the ground. So it was a quite aggressive timetable. The plant is now running at close to nameplate capacity. We're still ramping up completely. I would say meeting the usual challenges that you have with a new facility of that size. I think the challenges that we have seen throughout the Cassopolis project have been just an overall supply chain challenge that made it difficult to procure the simple stuff sometimes, if you will. And the other challenge that we have seen is, you know, we brought some new technology to the U.S. with that plant. So it's the first time, for example, you see this melting technology that we use where you can delacquer scrap and melt it sort of in the same piece of equipment for production of extrusion ingot. So all of those things add up to create some ramp up challenges, but we feel good about where we are today and are excited about what 2025 will bring.
And was that high forge technology that you were referencing, or is it a different technology?
So in Cassopolis, we aren't producing high forge. We're producing, if you will, regular extrusion ingot. But there are a few things in Cassopolis that are new and different when it comes to recycling-based production in the U.S. One is the system that we installed to be able to use more post-consumer or end-of-life shredded scrap. And that's this delacquering technology that we developed in partnership with one of our equipment suppliers in Europe. We've had it in our plant in Belgium now for several years, sort of the second iteration we installed in our recycling plant in Spain about 2.5 years ago. And then the latest model is in the Cassopolis plant. So it's a fairly unique piece of technology because it does let you use some more challenging types of scrap in production of extrusion ingot that performs the same as if it was produced in a primary smelter. And of course, one of the products that we make at Hydro is our Hydro Circol product, which we certify contains at least 75% post-consumer or end-of-life scrap. Another thing that we did in the Cassopolis plant is our proprietary LPC or low-pressure casting technology. And what that allows us to do is produce a wider range of alloys, you know, some more highly alloyed, particularly specialty automotive alloys. And the metallurgical properties, when you look at an extrusion ingot or a log of aluminum, the surface of that is what we call the inverse segregation zone. And with LPC technology, you get a much thinner inverse segregation zone, and that leads to certain performance advantages in the extrusion process. You get more stable performance, and actually we've shown in some trials in Europe more speed at the press. So it's higher productivity for the extruder and a product that's a more consistent quality. And the other thing is, as your profiles get wider and wider, sort of at the limit, if you will, of what the extruder can produce, having that thinner inverse segregation zone helps support, if you will, pushing the envelope on some of these profiles.
And then switching gears just a little bit, you had announced a metal sorting partnership with Padnos in Michigan late last year and a multi-year agreement with Sims Alumisource earlier this year to purchase processed aluminum scrap for melting at your North American extrusion plants. Can you tell me a little bit more about these partnerships and how they will help Hydra realize the goal of low carbon aluminum production?
Sure, I can start with Sims. The agreement between Sims and our extrusion division is a multi-year sourcing contract to provide shredded scrap, particularly into our Cressona plant. And you know, this allows Sims to support increasing the share of that type of material that we bring into the Cressona plant, sort of fits with the expanded melting capacity that has been added in that facility. With the Padnos partnership, which is, it's called AluSort, you know, that is about bringing technology, again, that we've developed in Europe and deploying it here in the U.S. To be able to sort aluminum scrap by alloy. You know, as we look to increase the amount of particularly post-consumer scrap that we use in our plants, being able to sort that scrap into different alloys is very important for us to be able to produce the material that our customer needs. Know, as most people in the recycling business know, if you know what goes in the furnace, it's much easier to control what comes out of the furnace. And the technology that we have developed that is being deployed in the AluSort joint venture is our proprietary high-speed LIBS technology, so laser-induced breakdown spectroscopy. And yes, it took me forever to learn how to say that. But it's quite advanced, and we're very pleased to be able to bring that to the U.S. for the first time. And what that does, again, is it allows us to dig into the pile a bit further and use metal units that previously may have been exported, for example, because you could not sort them in a cost-effective way.
So are you particularly talking about the Zorba and Twitch grades?
So that's it's end of life scrap. It's mixed alloys. And historically, that has been exported to Asia. Some used in secondaries, but by and large exported. And so if you can keep that metal at home, if you will, in the U.S., and recycle it here. All sorts of advantages that, of course, come with that. And we look forward to sort of growing the volume, if you will, of that type of material that we use throughout our footprint.
And I know AluSort just started up, the last full week of September? So I imagine it's a little too soon to talk about how operations have been progressing there. But if you've got anything along that, we'd love to hear it.
Sure. We've been tinkering with it for a while, for lack of a better way of saying it. And so, now we're at the point where we can start to take commercial scale volumes through the facility. We will consume that material in Cassopolis, but the facility, or rather the joint venture with Padnos, will have the ability to deliver scrap to others as well. If we sort material, there will be material that we use, and there will be material that we will not use. And that material that we will not use, our partners at Padnos will deliver into the market.
And I have a follow-up related to the AluSort partnership. Is that focused on production scrap largely, or is the obsolete scrap involved in that as well?
It's by and large obsolete scrap. Okay. And so, again, one of the main pillars, if you will, of Hydro's three-part strategy, you know, our path to zero, is recycling, and particularly recycling of post-consumer scrap. You know, post-consumer scrap, of course, that's material that's reached the end of its life. So its carbon footprint has been accounted for. And to bring that back into the loop, it doesn't carry a carbon burden. So when we're trying to help our customers meet their goal of delivering low carbon products, the more post-consumer scrap we can use, the better. Historically, of course, that has been challenging in value-added products like billet or slab. And one of the things that we've worked on quite a lot at Hydro now for close to 15 years is how we can use more of those types of materials in value-added products. So we'll continue to push. We explore more opportunities all the time. And at the end of the day, it's kind of a, you know, in a way, it's a bit of a no-brainer. Why not keep that material in the loop? Why not keep it here in North America and turn it back into valuable products that we can use?
Are you pursuing other partnerships for either sorting or sourcing scrap? And what does a company, what do you as a company look for when you're selecting other companies to partner with?
I would say that, you know, we have a very, depending on who you talk to, aggressive, I would say, goal to expand our recycling capacity globally. It's been communicated through our external capital markets presentations. I would expect that we will look to do that in the footprints where we currently operate. So that's largely Europe and the US. You know, what that will look like and with whom and how, of course, that's, I would say, to be determined. You know, what we saw in Padnos, for example, was a company, number one, that has been around for a while. Believe it or not, Hydro and Padnos were both started the same year. So we share a duration in that regard. Second is a commitment to operate responsibly, particularly on, you know, on HSE issues. So not only the external environment, but also the internal environment, how the, you know, the workforce is treated and those types of things. And then I guess the other thing that is of critical concern to us is, you know, can you do something more? You know, are you looking forward, building on a strong foundation, and looking to do things to advance recycling, for example, in North America? You know, and Padnos has, as many others, you know, significant players have been part of that evolution, and you know, we will look to continue to work with companies that share those types of approaches.
You're looking for really a partner who can add value then to the scrap streams that you'll be consuming in a matter of words.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if we were to expand beyond, if you will, a traditional purchasing arrangement, you know, to do a joint venture or something else, yes, it would be looking for a partner that has capabilities and is pushing the envelope along with us to advance recycling. But again, you know, all to be determined in the future.
Yeah. And what about just regular suppliers of scrap to you? Do you have any advice for potential suppliers who might supply the company in terms of, putting together the best packages for you and, getting the best value then for the scrap that they're selling to you?
Yes, I mean, obviously, we're not going to do this all ourselves, and we're not going to do this all through joint ventures. Our scrap supplier base is an important partner, if you will, in that sense. What we look for is the types of things that I think the supplier base increasingly understands. Number one, traceability. When you talk about a product like HydroCircal, we have an audited supply chain behind that product. So our suppliers that support production of that product, we audit them to ensure that we're getting the material that we need. And then our third-party auditors audit the audit to make sure that everything is documented and is traceable. The second one, again, right behind that, or maybe even in front of that, is HSE. Are you operating responsibly? Are you sourcing responsibly? All of those things are important for us when we interact with our supplier base. Hydro has a very robust supplier code of conduct that we expect our suppliers to abide by. It's on our website. It's quite easy to find. And it's a requirement in every purchase order or contract that we issue. And so in there, you will see these types of things, right? And that, of course, is how we can then turn around and tell our customer, we are sourcing this material that we are then recycling in a responsible fashion. And here are the steps that we are following to do that.
Now, with the Alu-Sort, and the trying to sort mixed aluminum scrap that would otherwise be exported, how critical will upgrading that scrap be to Hydro's sourcing strategy in the future, especially as competition for obsolete scrap increases? Everybody wants the decarbonization benefits, right, of the obsolete scrap. So, and are you looking into other technologies then that could also facilitate that sorting?
I guess the short answer is yes. the longer answer is, of course, again, our end customers have these goals, and that pushes their supplier base, us, to try and help them meet those goals, which we are, of course, have been working on for quite some time, again, at Hydro. And that's why you see things like this technology that we have at Alu-Sort. That's not something that was developed overnight. Right, there's 10 years of R&D work that is behind that piece of technology. So we will continue to investigate, evaluate, and look for the best and most economical ways to source more scrap and transform that scrap into product. That could be more technology that we develop. It could be technology that we purchase in the market from others, or it could be something that gets developed jointly with an external party. I think all of those options are on the table as we look to dig deeper into the scrap pile, as we like to say. There are metal units available, right? All you have to do is look at the scrap export numbers to see that there are metal units there. Being able to sort those metal units in a cost-effective and, again, environmentally responsible fashion is one of the challenges that we have as an industry, and why Hydro is investing in things like the Alusort joint venture.
Is the company also investing in other technologies that will enable it to lower its carbon footprint generally or increase its scrap use?
Yes. You know, I think I mentioned earlier, we sort of have three pillars in this 2030 strategy to decarbonize. If you look particularly in the recycling space, recycling, I think we all know, uses about 5% of the energy as primary aluminum production. But we do consume energy in the cast house, and typically that is fossil fuel based energy. We have some projects that we have been working on to look at alternatives for that. We produced the first commercial volumes of aluminum using green hydrogen in Spain last year. We also have a project to convert one of our furnaces at our Sunndal smelter in Norway to plasma. So to investigate that technology and see if it's an option to replace the fossil fuels being used in the cast house to drive out that last bit of carbon, if you will, in the recycling process. The other thing that we spend a lot of time on that maybe doesn't get as much attention is on the alloy side, working to develop alloys that meet our customers' requirements, but also allow for the use of more scrap material in the production of those alloys. We have a large R&D team in Norway and now in Michigan as well, that, spend a lot of time in partnership with our customers on that journey.
And so what are some challenges you see facing aluminum scrap consumers in the next 3 to 5 years?
If you look at the next 3 to 5 years in the U.S., obviously there's more melting capacity coming online. You have flat roll product melting capacity being added at scale for the first time in 35 or 40 years. I forget the exact date. And you see more melting capacity for extrusion ingot being added. Of course, that means demand for scrap. At the same time, it also means that scrap will be generated in the production process and brought back in the form of return of the products that are being produced from those facilities. So to manage that transition from bringing those facilities online until the scrap streams build up to match the melting capacity, that's because it is a significant addition of melting capacity, it could create some short-term challenges, we would say, in ensuring that things are balanced. Over time, of course, the products will come back. Look at a beverage can, for example, 60 to 70 days, that beverage can is back again. So, those scrap loops will be there to support the production. But there is going to be a need for more metal units. And again, they're there. It's just getting them to the right home.
Yes, or getting people to put that aluminum can in the recycling bin as opposed to the garbage can. The consumer.
Absolutely. I mean, beverage can recycling rates in the U.S. are not where they need to be. And we need to look at all options on how we can improve recycling rate for beverage cans. In Europe, recycling refunds are the norm. And I think most everyone knows Hydro is based in Norway. In Norway, the UBC recovery rate is in the high 90s. So it can be done in advanced economy countries. It can be done in non-advanced economy or countries. You know, you look at Brazil, for example, the UBC recovery rate in Brazil is also in the high 90s. So there are multiple ways to get there. I think it's a collective challenge for producers and consumers to find a way to do that.
And what opportunities do you see ahead then for the aluminum sector more generally?
When you look out over the next, say, 10 years, there are some pretty strong tailwinds, actually, for aluminum. The battery electric vehicle transition, whether it's a bit slower than maybe previously forecast or not, it's highly supportive of aluminum demand. Aluminum's lightweight, it's strong, it's malleable, it's corrosion resistant, all sorts of good things that make it good for use in vehicles. And if you have a vehicle with a heavy battery in it and you need to save weight, even more interesting. Electrification in general, will be supportive of aluminum demand. You need transmission, you need grid. Solar is another great growth opportunity for aluminum. You look at those solar panels on a rooftop, and it's an aluminum extrusion that's around the outside of it and that's holding it up underneath. So, and then packaging. I think aluminum has some advantages when it comes to packaging because of its recyclability. It's also, it doesn't leak, if you will, from the waste stream. No one's talking about micro aluminum in the ocean. It's because it doesn't do that. And so you can bring that aluminum back into the loop. Again, we have a UBC recovery challenge that we need to meet. But as a packaging option, aluminum is extremely well positioned, and you see it growing. Canned water, canned wine, it's been quite a shift over the last few years, and part of the reason that you see more rolling capacity being built in the United States.
Canned pre-made cocktails. You mentioned the solar panels as a growing market for aluminum too. Have you started to see aluminum coming back from solar panels being recycled at this point?
Minimal amounts, I would say. The first generation of solar panels, say on the West Coast, are getting towards the end of their life. But the real explosion in solar has happened in the last 15 years, give or take, and most of that capacity is still in use.
What is the general life cycle of a panel, do you know?
At the top of my head, I'm not sure. I think it's between 20 and 30 years, depending on the technology. Yeah.
Yeah. They're durable goods that will take a while to come back to you, like so much of the products that aluminum is used in, with the exception of packaging. But is there anything else that you would like to bring up before I let you go for the day?
I guess I would just say, you know, recycling is an exciting area for us. It's a growth area for Hydro globally. It will take many facets, everything from more melting capacity that we bring online, to partnerships like the AluSort joint venture, to continuing to strengthen our relationship with our supply chain and the recycling yards that are the feeder of the post-consumed material that we need for our production. So look forward to what that journey will bring in continuing to work with others in the industry to advance the circular economy, as they say.
Well, thank you, Duncan, for joining us today on The Scrap Show and sharing how aluminum recycling factors into Hydro's growth and Hydro's future. I appreciate your time.